Welcome everybody to the spring convention of the 2013 CCB Convention and Conference. Today it's a very special day. Every day is a special day, but today is a unique day because we have a gentleman here from Sterling Adapter. Mark Gibbons is going to be demonstrating a program from Dolphin called Guide. For those of you that don't know what Guide is, it is an amazing tool for a lot of people who may not have an interest in computers or may find computers a little frustrating. However, they do have the smarts to use them. They just don't want to deal with all the rhetoric. And how many of you like Windows 8? Yeah. Look how many of you said hi. Windows 8 is the greatest nightmare. But you know what? Once Dolphin is set up to run in Windows 8, you won't have to worry about it because you can use this interface. It'll be a constant, consistent, and interactive, user-friendly interface. Anyway, for this kind of a program is something that is needed to make the quality of life better for some people who want to use computers to do everyday tasks. For the elderly, it's something that's simple and easy, straightforward. For some of us youngsters like myself, Mr. Teenage America, for us, it's great to have something that's simple and easy. If we want to go create something, we know we can go to the specific menu and do it. Anyway, so we'll be hearing about that. Following that, Pete DeVasto from Adobe is here. And here's your chance, folks, to talk to a guy who is in the forefront of PDF accessibility and Adobe products. So he will be our speaker. And if there's time, if time permits, I will come up here. And how many of you made it to CSUN this year, to the CSUN conference down in San Diego? Some of you did. Okay, good. I have a product that I really, really like. It's, you guys heard of ABIC. They make the iPal products. Well, they have an iPal Ace, and that is a very cool product, and I'll talk to you about it later. In the meantime, it's almost time for us to get started, so I'm going to turn the microphone over to Mark, and Mark is going to tell you about Guide. And even though the announcement said that there will be a discussion on Supernova and things, it's best to just focus on Guide for what it does and what it can really do. And I think it's good if we can just do that. I plan to get a presentation for Supernova for those of you who want to know about HAL and all the magnification software. And you can know how that works. Anyway, without further ado, Mark, I'm going to turn it over to you and welcome, and I'm glad that you're able to make it to present this product to our members.
Okay, thank you very much for having me. Hopefully you can all hear me, and hopefully you'll be able to hear the program I'm about to show you. I just wanted to say one other thing, Louis, while you were here. You were talking about Windows 8. I want to just express this last weekend. I live in Northern California, and I went to a local mall, as you call them over here in America, malls. And I went past the Apple store, and I don't know whether any of you have been into an Apple store recently, but they are always packed with people in there. I'm not sure what they do in there, but they're always packed with people in there. I would like to think maybe they were going in there because there was problems with their systems, but I doubt it's that. It's probably just the popularity of the products. And then two or three storefronts down was the Windows 8 store. And how many people were inside it? The five people who work there. And I think we're starting to see here, from my point of view anyway, is that Microsoft is so desperate to be Apple, it's lost focus on what it really should be doing as a manufacturer. You can all disagree with me, but that's my point of view. Okay, so Louis asked me to come along and demonstrate a product called Guide. Guide, not the right product for everybody to start off. It's a very unique product. Guide was originally designed for people who have, who are blind and low vision, who struggle with using the Windows operating system. So it really is designed as a product for those people who are either elderly, who are wanting to get into computers and have lost their vision or are losing their vision, or those people who are never going to feel fully confident in using the Windows operating system. I mean, we all know of people who are in that situation where they want to get onto a computer, but they're never going to manage Windows 8, whether they're using a product like Zoom Text or whether they're trying to use a screen reader. You know, Windows is not an easy operating system to learn if you've never used a computer before. You know, it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and there are some people who are never going to get to handle with it, but still want to be able to do simple things like emails, writing letters and documents, and maybe going on the internet. So Guide is from the United Kingdom. It's manufactured by Dolphin. It was originally manufactured by a company called Software Express, again, an English company. And that is no, I have no relationship to them, although I am English myself. As Louis said, I'm from Sterling Adaptives, so I ought to just say a bit about myself before I go ahead about Guide. As you can tell from my accent, I am from England originally. I came here in 2001. I manage and own a assistive technology company here in Northern California. We cover everywhere from down to around the Fresno area, Bakersfield, all the way up to the Northern California border, representing a number of different manufacturers, and one of them happens to be this product. Myself, I've been involved in this industry since 1979, so I've been involved with people who have low vision and blindness for a very, very large amount of years. In fact, it's the only thing I've done very well in my life is work in this field, and I have a lot of experience. So Guide. Guide is basically, I don't know whether many of you remember a product called Freedom Box. Do any of you remember that? Which was, Freedom Box was designed to be an interactive operating system that worked on a computer but allowed it to be really simple to use. Guide pretty much takes the same idea in the fact that once you load the program onto your system, you have a simple menu structure. So all the windows have disappeared. You're not using a desktop. You're not using maximize, minimize, restored windows. You are using an interface that purely comes up on the screen in front of you with the numbers 1 to 9 on the first screen. So as you go through the screen to go from one option to another, all you have to do is move up and down with the arrow keys, making it very simple. I mean,
press 2 to write letters and other documents. Press 3 to access a website. Press 4 to scan and read a book, magazine, letter or printed page. Press 5 to find someone's address or telephone number in your address book. Press 6 to play an audio music CD, an audiobook, or an MP3 music file. Press 7 to look at your calendar or set a reminder.
So basically, to go to any option you want, once you've used this product for a while, you can just hit the number that relates to the option you choose. But when you're first using it, you can just go up and down using the up and down arrow to the one you want to get to.
Press 8 to record or playback a voice memo. Press 9 for more menu options. To close this program, press escape.
Okay, and they have built into it the fact that if you use the escape key at any point, it takes you backwards or it takes you back in the direction that you came from, making it very simple that you know at any point if you get lost or you're not sure what you're doing with the product, you can hit the escape key to get back to the menu you originally started at. So as you can tell from this list here, the list continues on, but the first option on the main menu is the emails list, which is where you can set up and retrieve and get hold of your emails. And I'm going to go into that menu just so you get an idea of what the program does when you go into each of these sections. Now, the thing to remember is that it helps you all the way by telling you exactly what you need to do at any point. Again, it's been designed specifically for people who are not computer competent or literate.
1. Email setup menu. Press 1 to configure your email settings now. Press 2 to configure your email settings later. Press F1 for help. Press escape to go back to the main menu.
So I actually haven't set up my emails on here because this is my business computer, so I don't want to have my emails going into two different programs. But basically, if I hit the number 1 now, it'll help me configure my email settings. And if you're somebody who uses a Gmail account, it pretty much does everything for you. without you having to worry about putting in your poppoint.yahoo.com or whatever your address is. It will automatically configure it for you, so you don't have to worry about that. It's pretty simple to set up when you first get going on it. And you can read your emails, and every time you go into this menu, once you've set up your menu, your email account, you can read old emails, you can download and retrieve new emails, or you can write an email. So once you've set up your email, you get more options on this first screen. And at any point that you're not sure exactly what you're doing with the product, if you press the F1 key.
F1. Help page. Email setup menu. Use the up and down arrow keys to explore the available menu options. Press the enter key to select an option. Alternatively, press the corresponding menu option number. There are two options on this menu. This menu is only escape. Help page closed.
Okay, now
email setup menu.
You'll notice I pressed the escape key and I came back out to the help menu. So the help menu is context sensitive, so it will give you help based upon whereabouts in the program. So anytime you hit the F1 key, you're not getting a general help file, you're getting a help file based upon whereabouts in the program you are. Okay, I'm going to go back to the
main menu.
So, the... The other thing to remember is every time you go to a new menu, the lady will start talking from the very top all the way through down the bottom. It's designed to be to reinforce each of the menu items every time you go back, and eventually once you're used to the program, you can turn it off so you don't have to have her announcing every single item that's of you once you know what you're doing. So number two is letters and documents.
Document menu. Press 1 to write a new letter. Press 2 to write a new document. Press 3 to find a saved letter or document. Press 4 to define auto text. Press 5 to open a PDF document. Press 8 to show advanced options. Press escape to go back to the main menu.
Okay, and you can press the control key just like you can with a screen reader at any point just to make her go quiet. Okay, so you have options here. So you have the option to write a new letter. You have the option to write a new document. The difference being, if I go in to write a new letter now.
One, I will now ask you for a number of pieces of information. New letter, step one, destination address. Press one to type in a destination address for this letter. Press two to select a destination address from your address book.
So the two options here are, one is you can type the destination address, or if you're going to write a letter to somebody who's already in your address book, you just choose number two and then go down the list of your addresses in your address book and choose the right one. The reason they have this built in here to write a letter is, of course, they want to help you format your letter correctly by putting your to address and your from address in the correct places on the paper once it's printed out. So using this function within the program will enable you to format your letter in the way that letters are supposed to be formatted.
Escape. Letter and document menu.
So if I just hit escape twice, I go right back to the main menu again. I didn't do anything. I didn't change anything. But I'm right back to the main menu again. Number three is access a website. I don't have the internet set up on here at the moment, but it's a very simple access to the website. Very similar, you know, up and down arrows to go through the website when you get there. I'm not going to say it makes using a website easy, because I don't think there's anything out there in the world that makes using a website easy. Number four on the list is scan and read. So if you have a scanner attached to your laptop or to your desktop computer, whether it be a multifunction printer or a standalone scanner, if you choose option number four, you can scan and read a document, or scan and read multiple pages and then have them read back later on. So you get the full ability with this to not only be able to do letters, write documents, do your emails, do your website, but also you can utilize it to scan and read information, providing you have a scanner. Number five, address book here.
Five, address book menu. Press 1 to view your address book, or
Press 2 to add a new person.
Okay, so we're in the address book now. And I want to add a new person to my address book. So
2. Add new person to your address book. I will now ask you for this person's details. Please type a title for this person if they have one.
Okay, so the person's
title. Press enter when you have finished.
You'll notice she tells me exactly what I need to do once I've typed in what I need to do.
Car. Enter. Please type a first name for this person.
Okay, I'm going to put my details in.
When you have finished. Hey, okay. Enter. Please type a surname for this person. Press enter when you have finished. Capital G-I-B-B-O-N-S. Enter. Please type a company name for this person if they have one. Capital E-R-L-I-N-G. Sterling. Capital E-A-P-T-I-B-E-S. Enter. Please type the first line of the person's address. Press enter when you have finished. 6262. Capital R. O O K W O O B. Brookwood. Capital E E.
Okay, so that noise that it made, like the duck sound, is supposed to tell me that I've just typed something incorrectly. So it's like a built-in spell checker, although it's actually incorrect because I do have an office on Brookwood. Well, it's basing the spell checker is on constantly, and it's based upon whatever it pulls in. So I'm not sure whether they built in a spell checker the same as Microsoft Word or something similar to that they pulled in here. But the noise there was actually incorrect. Although maybe Brookwood isn't a word that's correct. I mean, I don't know.
Enter. Please type the second line of the person's address. Press enter when you have fit. U-I-T-E. Sweet. Capital A. Enter. Please type the third line of the person's address. Enter. Please enter. Please type a zip code for this person. 95404. Enter. Please type a country for this person. Capital A. Enter. Please type an email address for this person. mark@sterlingaapapies.com. Enter. Please type a Skype name for this person.
Now, I don't know how
press
many of you...
when you have finished.
I don't know how many people here in the States use Skype, but Skype is huge in Europe, which is why it's in this program. And it's becoming bigger over here, I know that for sure. So you can actually type in your Skype information as well into here. I don't have a Skype account, so I can't actually put anything in.
Enter. Please type a full telephone number for this person. Press 415246-3424. Enter. You may enter here any notes you wish to record against this person.
Okay, so you can write notes so that you have something to remember if there's something important you need to know about that person you just wrote about.
Capital E-I-S. It's E-X-C-E-L-L-E-N-T.
I can't even spell.
Enter. Save to address book.
Okay, so then once you finish putting
press
all the details in...
Press 1 to save a new person to your address book. Press 2 to change the details you have entered. Press escape to discard the details you have entered and return to the address list. Press F1 for help.
Okay, so I'm going to save it.
1. Address saved successfully. You have 3 people in your address book. The selected person is number 2. Mr. Mark Gibbons. Telephone number 415246-3424. Address, Sterling Adaptive 62 Brookwood Avenue. Suite A, 95404. USA. Email, mark@sterlingadaptives.com. Notes, he is excellent. Use the keyboard arrow keys to find a different person. Press escape. Address book menu.
And if I press escape, I go back to the address book menu
press
again.
To view
and I can add more people.
Escape. Main menu.
Hit escape again, I'm back to the main menu.
Press 1 to send and receive emails. Press 2 to write letters and other documents.
Okay, so number 6 on the list here is play an audio CD or MP3. So this enables you a simple, easy way of playing audio files, just like a simple way of using a media player like Windows Media or something like that. If we keep going down the list.
Press 7 to look at your
7
calendar,
is a calendar. So if you're somebody who keeps your calendar going, we can go into the calendar
7.
Menu.
April 2013. The selected day is today, Thursday, 11th April 2013.
So if I have something next week.
Use the up and down arrow keys to find a different day. Press enter to view details. Press escape to go back.
There's not much for me to teach you here because she keeps on telling me everything she needs to do. So I just need to use the up and down arrow to choose a different day. So I just keep going down until I get to the day I want to do.
Sunday, 21st April 2013. Monday, 22nd April 2013.
Okay, so I'm going to put something in.
Enter. Monday, 22nd April 2013. The selected time is 1 p.m. Use the up and down arrow keys to find a different time. Press enter to continue and escape to go back. 12 p.m., 11 a.m., 10 a.m. Enter. Please type in your appointment. Press escape to continue. O-C-T-O-R-S. New line. A-P-P-O-R-S-T-E-F-E-F-E-F-E-I-N. In. O-A-F-E-R-T. Runner. A-R-K.
I'm just going to keep making mistakes so everybody laughs.
Escape. You may choose to be reminded about this appointment.
The yes, you could. You can turn the spell checking
no
off.
Reminder. Use the up and down arrow keys to select a different reminder. Press enter to select it.
Yes, eventually. Once you get used to it. Yes, it can be a bit annoying after a while, the tutor messages. But, you know, when you're first starting, again, you have to remember that this product is specifically for people who really are very new to using computers. So, therefore, a lot of this instruction may be needed for. If you're somebody who's a competent user of a computer, who's a screen reader user or a magnification user, you're probably sitting there thinking, well, this is way too much information that I don't want to ever hear again. But that's probably because the product isn't the product that would be the product that you would be using. You know, it's really for somebody who hasn't used a computer or wants to learn to use a computer and is going to struggle with anything outside of, you know, anything like the Windows operating system. So we can select a reminder. So if you're somebody who leaves your computer on all the time, it will remind you before your appointment.
Enter. Reminder, no reminder. Monday, 22nd, April 2013. The selected time is 10 a.m. Doctor's appointment in Ronald Park. Use the up and down arrow keys to find a different time. Press enter to continue and escape to go back. Escape. April 2. Escape. Main menu.
And again, I hit escape twice and I'm back to the main menu again.
Press 8 to record or play back.
You have the option here of number 8, which is voice memos. Again, your computer has to have a microphone on it. Either, you know, if your laptop has a built-in microphone, that'll work. Or if you're somebody who has a microphone built in for Skype use, then you can create voice memos.
Press 9 for more menu options.
Oh, and we have
including
some.
Including the calculator, dictionary, magnifier, and photocopier.
Okay, so we have more options there, of which some of them are calculator, dictionary, magnifier, and photocopier.
9. Main menu, more options. Press 1 to use the calculator.
On this menu, this is the main menu, more options. And again, if I get to the main menu, more options, and I want to go back to the main menu again, I just hit the escape key and it'll take me back to where I was previously. The calculator option is here. There is a built-in dictionary and thesaurus. If you have a scanner, you can take in picture. The number 3 is picture and handwriting magnifier. It is basically a way you can use your scanner to take a visual image of the document that's on the scanner, and then you can then magnify it once you've opened it up. Number four, the option there is the photocopier, which is where you can use your scanner to photocopy something simply, as opposed to nowadays, you know, having to use all the buttons on the front of your photocopying machines, which are becoming less and less accessible. I'll be honest with the multifunction machines. Number five is the file manager, which enables you to control files, open files, just manage the whole of the file system within Guide Program. Number six is Internet News Reader.
Press 6 to 6. Internet News Feed menu. Press 1 to read news from your Internet News feeds.
So it has a bunch of Internet News feeds. It'll go out, if I was on the Internet, and pull in a bunch of the local Internet News feeds that might be available to me. Everything from 80s through to talk radio, through to 90s, through to country, through to a whole gamut of different options. You can also add news feeds. Some are accessible or available to the program, some are not, so they're not all going to be available. There are some British ones on there as well if you want to know what's going on in the homeland. So it has built-in things just to make it easier, because how many of us, you know, how many people out there want to get their news and they want to get it through the internet? And, you know, yes, you could go to the access a website option within this to go to a news feed, but much simpler just to choose a news feed and get the headlines from CNN that's coming down right now.
Escape. Main menu. More options.
Excuse me.
Press 7 to practice using
the keyboard.
Keyboard
practice number 7. So they have built into it in the last version of this product a built-in keyboard practice, because, again, with most of the people who are starting to learn to use computers or have never used the computers, 9 times out of 10, the keyboard and skills are not very strong. So, yes, using a product like this does need you to know how to type and to type the right words and the right letters in the right place, because it, you know, it's part and parcel of learning to use a computer. So they've built in keyboard practice. So we can go into the keyboard practice here.
Keyboard practice. Press any key on the keyboard to hear its letter or number read out. F, J, K, E, S, L.
So it's basically a way of you going in and just learning the keys and hearing them being spoken out loud as you practice. There's no tutorial there.
Does the pitch change mean that the letters, the higher voice is uppercase, or is that just the way you were?
J-I-L-O-P-U-Y-T.
I think that's just the speech engine's way of saying why.
Okay. Escape. Keyboard practice finished. Main menu. More options. Press 8 to adjust Guide's color, voice, email, internet, and other settings.
So you can go into the system settings. And one important thing they've built into this is, because once systems have been set up, you want to be careful about changing them. So if you want to go into the system settings, yes, you can change your settings, but she will do this.
8. Warning. Proceed with caution. System settings menu.
Okay, so
press 1 to adjust screen colors, text appearance, or my voice. Press 2 to change the internet connection settings. Press 3 to change the email settings. Press 4 to change Guide settings. Press 5 to back up or restore all the Guide documents and settings. Press 6 to find out what version of Guide you are using. Press 7 to build your own custom menu for Guide. Press 8 to check for any program updates. Press Escape to go back to the previous menu. Press F1 for help.
So again, the system settings menu, she warns you, if you're going to go in here, you could change something that could drastically change the way the program works, and you may not be happy with that. You can change the colors, the text, the voices built into here. You can change your email settings if they suddenly change. You can change the, you can do backups and restores. So if you're going to move it from one computer to another, you know, from an old computer to a new computer, you can do a backup so you don't lose anything. And it does save automatically all your documents and all your emails that exist on your system. So you don't have to worry about your emails. They will be transferred once you transfer the file to a new system.
Press A to check. Press 7 to escape. Main menu. More
and again,
options.
Escape takes you backwards.
Press 1 to... Press 9 for the guide extras menu.
So we've got even more stuff. So we have the main menu, we have the main menu more options, and then we have the main menu more options guide extras.
9. Guide extras menu. Press 1 to retrieve and play podcasts. Press 2 to play an internet radio station. Press 3 to create a CD or DVD, or convert an audio CD to MP3. Press 4 to make Skype internet telephone calls over the internet. Press 5 to play a DVD or file. Press 6 to manage your finances. Press 7 to send an instant message. Press 9 to start remote support. Press G to select a game to play. Press Escape to go back to the previous menu. Press F1 for help.
So as you'll see on this menu here, you have a lot more options in here. So there are an awful lot of things you can do with this product, you know, the internet radio player. Now, the one big warning I will have, and we found over here in the United States, is a lot of the very, very well-known internet stations, especially things by Clear Channel and that, are not available through this player because of the way you have to subscribe to them and connect to them. You can create a CD and DVD just like you would if you were using a Windows operating system. You have your Skype selection, so it'll start up your Skype account, it'll start up interaction, and you'll be given the options of the people you want to contact and speak to. You have your DVD and movie player. It doesn't speak, but it's pretty much like a media player again, but instead of being just based around music, it's based around the sections of a movie. My Finances is a basic Excel-type spreadsheet product. It's not what I would call a full-functioning Quicken or QuickBooks or type program, so don't think it's anything more exciting than that.
Press 7 to send an instant message.
So you have Instant Messenger in there.
Press 9 to start remote support.
If you're having problems with it, you can start up and easily start up a remote support session directly with technicians at Dolphin.
Press G to select a game to play.
And they put in some basic games in here as well.
G. Games menu. Press 1 to play Anagram. Press 2 to play Hangman. Press 3 to play Countdown. Press 4 to start the basic typing tutor. Press 5 to set up the game's screen colors. Press Escape to go...
So you have a game called Anagram, Hangman we're all familiar with, Countdown, and in here they have the basic typing tutor. So they've actually built into the new version, under the games menu, a typing tutor that will tell you the letters to press. So if you want to play a game of Hangman,
please select the difficulty level. Use the up and down arrow keys to select the menu option, currently set to easy.
Okay, I'm going to have... Which level does everybody want to take? Was that difficult, I heard?
No.
Oh, I heard difficult, I'm
difficult.
Sure.
Enter. Welcome to Hangman. There are 9
Okay, I'm
going to
call out letters now.
Use the arrow keys to select a letter on the screen or press key on the keyboard. You have 10 lives remaining.
Okay, go ahead. Give me a letter.
A. Correct. The letters are blank, 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 blank. A, blank, blank.
Come on. R.
Oh. R, drawing the base, there are 9 lives left.
T, is in tango.
T, correct. The letters are blank, blank. T, blank, blank. T, A, T, blank.
We did R. N as in Nancy.
N, correct. The letters are blank. N, T, blank, blank.
T A T blank.
Which one are we going for, E or I?
I, correct. The letters I. N. T. Blank. Blank. T. A. T. Blank.
We still have loads of letters left. It did accept the I. We haven't used E. We haven't used O.
E, correct. The letters I. N. T. E. Blank. T. A. T. E. S. Correct. The letters I. N. T. E, S, T, A, T, E. Congratulations, you have won the game. The word was intestate.
Never heard of it.
Intestate. We should look that up in a minute and see what it means. I was about to say, that's a weird way of saying interstate.
That's not it.
No.
Escape.
But, I mean,
use the up and down arrow keys to select.
It's made in England,
option,
but probably with the Queen's Dictionary.
New game. Game menu. Enter. Game
so it has menu. Some fun things in there to help you press work out. We have the basic tutor.
Basic typing tutor.
So on the basic typing tutor, you have different options you can go to.
Lesson 2, home keys. Lesson 1, hand positioning. Lesson 2, home keys. Lesson 3, home plus space bar keys.
So, you know,
upgraded.
It's got some things built into it to help somebody learn to use the keyboard who's never used a keyboard before or is struggling with the keyboard.
Escape. Game menu. Escape. Guide extras menu. Escape. Main menu.
And if I just keep hitting escape, eventually main it'll menu. Take me back to the main menu and I'll be there.
Press
so I,
one
you know.
To send and receive emails.
I don't have to worry about where
press
I am or what I'm doing. I can always get back to the beginning where I know I need to start. Other things that it can do, of course you can change the how fast and how slow it is. At the moment, you can, if you hit the F12 key and you keep hitting it, it'll go round and round in the size of the image. So at the moment, I've got it on the number, I think 15 or something, so the menu pretty much fills up the whole of my screen. But I can make it bigger or smaller, which is whatever the person needs. I mean, some people, if you're just going to use the text-to-speech, you're not going to worry about the size of it. But just hitting F12. The F12.
Zoom for the main menu screen is now level 17. F12. Zoom for the main menu screen is now level 1.
And level 1, I can barely read myself, so it's quite small.
This is my new talking speed.
And F11 makes it faster and slower. And again, it's a rotating thing, so you just keep pressing the
F11. This is my new talking speed.
I should leave it on that one to punish us all.
This is my new talking speed.
So you have all those things built into it. And then once you finish with the program,
press 1 to close guide and turn off your computer.
If you hit escape at the main menu, you get
press 2 to close guide and return to the Windows desktop. Press 9 to select the language for menus and other text on screen. Press escape to go back to the main menu.
So in
press
this,
F1 for help.
In the standard American version, you have the option of choosing two. You can switch in between languages, Spanish and English is standard. So you can do that. And if, as I said, at the main menu, if you hit the escape key, you go to the close guide menu where you have the option of number 1, which is just to turn the computer off, or number 2 to escape to go to the Windows desktop. So you do have the option with this program to come out of it as a program and use other programs as well on the Windows environment very easily. But most of the people I work with will use this product and will just have it automatically come up when the computer comes up and will just turn off the computer and only ever use the Guide product. But I do have some people who have started with the Guide product and have moved on to Zoom Text later on, or have even moved on to using a screen reader as well. So it has been utilized as a tool to get them comfortable and experienced with using a computer in the first place. There is one other option that Guide can be. If you want to, you could also have the Guide hands-free version, which means if you have a copy of the Dragon Naturally Speaking premium version, you can use Guide hands-free, which is a more expensive product. You can use it to command the program. But I'm going to be honest with you, if you're going to use Dragon, even if you're using Dragon outside of any programs, you have to be the right person to use Dragon. It takes patience. You have to be accepting of its foibles, is the word I would use. You know, you have to be patient because Dragon takes a couple of seconds or so sometimes to convert what it heard to actually doing what it heard. So you have to have patience. I was working with a guy not long ago who had Guides hands-free. Found it very frustrating, and it just wasn't the right answer for him. I mean, he was trying to not use the keyboard and using the hands-free, but he just couldn't deal with the fact that when he said something, sometimes it may take a second and a half before it would respond, and therefore what he was doing is he was saying the thing twice, thinking it hadn't heard him, but it had heard him, so therefore it was doing double what he wanted it to do. So it's a very cool product, but as with all things, whether you're a Dragon user who's visually impaired or whether you're a Dragon user who's not visually impaired and has no disabilities whatsoever, it's a product that you have to have patience with, and you have to have understanding that things do make mistakes. It's a bit like scanning. You know, we all know that scanning is not perfect, and we have to accept the mistakes that scanning will make based upon what it scans. And it's the same with voice input, is you've got to allow the computer to understand that it will make mistakes, you know. And because Guide is a simple program, it doesn't have all the ins and outs that make speech recognition perfect. So it is available for those people who want to try it, but it's not right for everybody. You have to really weigh up the two things. Yeah, I'm using this on a Windows 7 computer. It's a regular piece of software. It retails at $795 for the product. Well, in Northern California, Sterling Adaptives is the distributor in Northern California. In Southern California, it is AT Creator in Southern California. If you're somebody who is a veteran and you get services and products through the Veterans Administration, it'll come from a different company because that contract is held by a different company for the whole of the United States. Currently, it doesn't have Braille display compatibility. It works best with a multifunction. I have managed to get it to work with the HoverCam, if you know the HoverCam. But I've had other people who haven't managed to get it working with the HoverCam. So maybe I was just lucky. So the word is that it's not guaranteed. But I'm sure that will come, because let's be honest, everybody nowadays is heading in the direction of using the digital cameras for the speed of scanning. It's emulating the Internet Explorer. Yes. 8, I believe. They may have changed that, because the version I've got here in front of me is version 7, which has only just been released. So I don't know which one they're emulating now. And if you want to know the difference between the previous version and this version, the main differences is that they've now added an extra authorization. So there are now 2 authorizations per license, and it's prettier.
Hi. I downloaded Guide a couple of years ago. I'm a tech trainer, and I was training somebody on it. I don't personally use the product. The problem is I cannot seem to get it off my computer. I didn't move it or put it in a weird directory or anything, but when I try to uninstall it, it says the directory cannot be found, and I just don't have a clue why I can't get it off.
Yeah, which operating system are you using?
Windows 7.
Well, I've not had problems with removing it, so I couldn't give you an easy answer without looking at your computer. Did you try using the add remove program that's to remove it?
Yeah, that's how I did it.
Maybe, I mean, in the guide menu that's put into under all programs, there is an uninstall process. Maybe the add and remove programs, I've sometimes found with some programs that if you go to add and remove programs and remove it and don't use the built-in uninstall that they've already installed, it can be a bit cumbersome. I've seen that with other things. That would be my advice.
Excuse me, did you say you can or cannot use this with Excel?
It doesn't interact with Excel. What I was trying to say is it has a finances section into it, which I think is similar to using Excel for your finances, but it's not as full of functioning as a finance program really should be. Any other questions?
Can you use this with Twitter and Facebook?
No. I mean, you could use it with Facebook through the internet browser, but it doesn't have any built-in specific functionality for those two programs.
Oh, they brought the mic. Just one other quick question in terms of the upgrading and so forth. Let's say you purchase Guide. Do you have to have a system maintenance agreement or cert, whatever they call those things?
You don't have to have a systems maintenance agreement, but you can purchase systems maintenance agreements if that's something you like to buy. I mean, I'll be honest with you, they've come out with version 7, and one of the things that they've improved for most of the people was the fact there was only one license previously and there was lots of licensing issues. So by adding in a licensing program that allows you to install it up to two times makes it a more functional authorization system. The improvement in the visual side of it, I'm not sure personally I see a big wow factor there. So SMAs is one of those difficult things. Do you buy an SMA? Do you not buy an SMA? I mean, for some people, every time you get an upgrade, you get great value by having an SMA if the manufacturers that are producing the product are giving you much more for your money. But as we all know, with a lot of products on the marketplace that are out there, sometimes we buy SMAs and we feel like we're paying for upgrades that aren't giving us anything beneficial. SMAs are always a hit. It can be a hit and miss, you know. Sometimes you can buy an SMA with a product and you're going to get great things in the next two or three upgrades, whichever product you're working with. But sometimes you may find the next two upgrades don't give you anything for you personally. So sometimes you may want to just wait and hold off and see what the manufacturers are going to come out with. But then again, of course, it's going to cost you more. I mean, it's one of those big toss-ups. I don't know. There is no right and wrong answer there. Any more questions? I would say that if you have anybody and you have people who've lost their vision or who are elderly or who are wanting to use computers, and this is the big thing, is you got to really want to use the computer. I come across so many people who are older who are being pushed into using computers because their family think it's a great way for them to communicate, but actually it's not something they really want to do. So you have to be the right person for any of these products. You know, you have to want to do it, and you have to be, willing to learn, because although it's a really simple program, you've still got to learn something new.
I have a quick comment and also a question. In my experience, having been working with people who can benefit from this, I can tell you folks that the new version, I've tried version 7 of Guide, and I'm really impressed with how much nicer and how cleaner it is. The question that for you, Mark, has to do with all in one unit support. I have come across folks who have had stuff purchased for them, such as the HP all-in-one units, and it's always been a hit-and-miss situation using the Twain driver. It may see all the devices, but then all of a sudden when you want to scan something or make a photocopy of something, it doesn't go. And I have not had a chance to play with version 7 on one of the all-in-one units that I kept from one of my clients, simply because I want to see if this problem has been conquered with the new revision. Have you had a chance to deal with a situation where the all-in-one units aren't being supported?
I've had varying, and I've had exactly the same experience as you've had, Louis. I've had varying success with all-in-one units, and that's across the board nowadays. The problem we're coming into now is that everybody wants all-in-one units because they take up less space, but the all-in-one units are becoming less and less accessible. I mean, I don't know anybody here has looked at like the new HPs. I mean, every single new HP all-in-one has a touch screen on it, which means it's completely inaccessible. You know, you can't do anything. You have to, the only way you can actually interact with it is if you can get accessibility through your computer, and there's only limitations as to what you can do through your computer. And these manufacturers just don't have, I think it's they don't have the time or the finances to buy every single all-in-one that's out there and test them all. I mean, up until years ago, you look at some of the other manufacturers who make scanning products alone, used to have lists of supported scanners and things like that. But those lists haven't been updated, I don't think, in the last 3 or 4 years. Because printers and scanners change all the time. I have found that with Guide, I've had a few hiccups here and there, but most of the hiccups I've found is when people are trying to use the Twain driver, which we're so familiar with always having to use Twain drivers with our products like OpenBook and Kurzweil, that actually, if you use the WIA, the WIA driver, I've had more success with Guide products. So I've had it work. I mean, I've had products that I always thought would work with other scanning products that have stopped working all in ones now. I'm having difficulty now. If anybody wants me to provide an all-in-one scanner and printer to go with OpenBook, I'm running out of ones that will actually work. I think the only one left now that actually iPhone does work is the Epson printers. So it can be hit and miss, unfortunately, and I've had the same experience. And I don't know if they've specifically addressed that within version 7, and as version 7's only been with me since Monday, I haven't had enough time to check it.
My microphone did. Oh, here it goes. Okay. They like me now. Thanks, guys. Very quickly, for those of you that want to use a scanner that doesn't use a touchscreen interface or all in one unit, I find that the Brother brand, I have a Brother Laser all in one, and it's a 7840W. And all the buttons are tactile and easy to operate. And I also find that the Canon all-in-ones, inkjets, are very reliable and easy to use also. Just for point of information. Anybody else have any other questions for Mark? Good. I hope you guys found his presentation enjoyable. I sure did. And excellent. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, we can allow her to introduce herself, but hang on. I think Pete had a question.
The problem is I had one too many glasses of Diet Coke at lunch. I need to take a break before I do my presentation. Sorry.
Well, okay. Well, I'll tell you what.
But that's the reality.
Okay, ACB World, Pete needs to take a break. Okay, now that we have that. Now, Michelle, are you here?
I am here.
Would you like to come up and speak to not just the audience here, but you're going to be talking to the world because we are being broadcast on ACB radio on the internet worldwide. So you never know who's listening. So watch what you say. Keep it clean. Okay. I am turning the microphone over to Michelle Klein, and she's going to tell you about her product.
Thank you very much. My name is Michelle Klein, and I'm here with Dr. Peter Borden. Can everyone hear me okay? We are with Jasper Ridge, which is a Silicon Valley-based company that's leveraging our experience in optical physics and eye physiology to provide lighting designed especially for people with low vision, not repurposed, but directed at the needs of people with low vision. The inspiration for inventing the Vision Edge was seeing Dr. Borden's father slowly lose his ability to conduct activities fundamental to his daily life. He began to be very frustrated and discouraged when he could no longer read his own financial statements or sign his name on a check, other activities that he was used to doing in his earlier adult life. And Peter, who is an applied physicist and with whom I've worked over the years in the electronics industry, figured there must be something in current applied physics and technology, and especially in the LED areas that we're familiar with, that could be applied to products that are as powerful and portable as they need to be for someone who needs much more light to see. So we built prototypes not just to perfect the optics that are based on the latest generation and high brightness LEDs, but also human factors that are really essential for using a product, like an on-off button that you can feel, an illuminator that clips on your glasses that doesn't require the strength of a power lifter. And then we got prototypes out in the hands of people who could use them, in people in low vision support groups that we were directed to by the Vista Center, and a fabulous crew at the Veterans Administration in Palo Alto and Menlo Park who decided to conduct a clinical study on whether this very bright, very small, portable light could indeed be helpful to people who need much more light and no glare. Fortunately, the VA did a wonderful and helpful study. Peter will tell you a bit about their results. And the low vision specialist at the Cal Pacific Sloan Ketterwell Group conducted a really large study and found that of the 152 patients they worked with, all people with AMD, that 88% could see about two blocks more on a standard reading chart if they had focused really bright light, and some with ring scotomas could see as much as eight blocks more on a standard reading chart if they had very bright light. So what's so hot about bright light? Don't we already have it when we go outdoors? Sometimes. And when we're indoors, including in rooms like this, we really don't have very bright light. When we're in restaurants and trying to read a menu, it can be a real challenge to read in dim light. And in our own homes, we may have one chair that's optimized for reading where we've got a floor lamp and maybe another lamp and a magnifier hanging off a desk lamp, but that doesn't allow us to go from room to room and read comfortably. It means that we're fixed in one position. And most of us would like to live as active lives as our health will allow. So we invented this really small light that would help people read in dim light in their home or in their workplace, to read pill bottles, so to avoid medication errors, to write checks or read financial statements, to assemble electronic parts or model railroads, to play cards or knitting, sewing, where you might need brighter light to determine one color yarn from another. What we found and what the VA and Smith Ketterwell validated is that many with vision loss really need much more bright light to see. But the problem with much more bright light is that it also causes glare, and glare in and of itself can be disabling. Hot spots are also a real strain to the eye. So in our very small product, we added a secondary lens, a lens that reduces glare to minimize eye strain, and illuminates only the area that you're reading. In other words, more or less uniform, rectangular, horizontal rectangular area, not a hot spot like you get from a flashlight. A flashlight or a little LED thing gives you a hot spot, but that's not what you see when you're trying to read. The Vision Edge is very portable and lightweight. And Pete, would you demonstrate?
So it has a light unit that weighs only 0.4 ounces. So it's you could mail two of them on a with a single postage stamp. And that was very important because we found that adding any weight to your glasses can often make it comfortable, especially if you want to do long duration tasks like reading. And that 0.4 ounce unit has 12 LEDs, as Michelle said. It will provide about 10 times more light than a normal reading light. And because the eye's response is not linear, it means you need to have very, very bright light, four to eight times more light to just double the perceived brightness. So when people really need bright light, you need this high level of light that's very hard to achieve by other light sources. And it just slips on glasses with an arm motion, so you don't have to squeeze. We designed it that way because many people have arthritis, or it's very hard for them to squeeze things. It has a tilt mechanism, so it aligns to text and lights just the text that you want to read, so you can have very bright light without getting reflections from the rest of the page. And that's how it eliminates the glare. The controls are very simple. It just has a tactile on-off switch, and then it has a brightness control, which is a dial that you can feel. It has a rechargeable battery. It has a rechargeable battery because many people with low vision have trouble changing batteries, both because it's hard to see what direction to put the battery in, and also just because it's hard to manipulate it for many people. It has a brightness control in it, so it has constant brightness even as the batteries get near the end of their charge. So you never have to be concerned about exactly when you should change batteries. And it runs off the AC adapter while charging. And then it comes with a small travel case. There was a study, as Michelle said, there was a study done at the Smith Kettlewell Eye Institute. This is in San Francisco. And this was done by Dr. Don Fletcher and also Ron Chouchard and Laura Renninger. And they studied 152 patients. So this was a very large study. And of those, 88% had macular degeneration. Out of that, with those people with macular degeneration, the average improvement was 2 blocks on the MN read chart. So that's a corresponds to about a 60% smaller letter size. And some people who had ring ceratomas, this is a special type of macular degeneration where the degeneration goes from the outside into the center, showed as much as 8 blocks of improvement on the chart. There's also been research done at the Veterans Administration. In one case, a veteran who had nystagmus, or roving eye, where he couldn't hold where it was hard for him to hold the eye steady, the light configuration that we have, which is a band of light, helped provide a light guide, and so this patient was able to increase his reading comprehension from 80 to 100% and his reading speed by 27 words a minute. The Western Blind Rehabilitation Center, which is part of the Palo Alto VA, also did studies on color and found that people with macular degeneration always preferred green light as opposed to white. And our lights come in both green and white. And in fact, we've co-authored a paper on using portable LED lighting for low vision with a main chief scientist at the VA. We've had a number of recommendations from low vision leaders. Greg Goodrich at the VA said it's a really innovative approach to providing bright needed for visual tasks such as working or reading. Don Fletcher said the Vision Edge is a great product. Many of my patients are seeing a significant improvement in reading performance. August Kollenbrander at Smith Kettlewell said almost all patients benefit from improved illumination. Patients with AMD may benefit spectacularly. So in conclusion, this is a unique light. It's specially designed for people with low vision, specifically designed with people with low vision in mind. And it has a patented optics that allow you to get very high levels of brightness, up to 10 times the normal reading level without while not increasing the glare. And it's been shown to be effective in clinical studies. Any questions? Yes, we'll be around through the end of this session. So if anyone wants to talk to us personally, we'll be available here. And we have a couple of the units to show to people. Yes, it costs $195. We have some distributors, and you can also purchase it on our website, which is jasperridge.net. And it's available on Amazon.com.
And if you have a question, if you could just raise your hand so we can get around to a mic. Thank you.
And we have some units here as well if you're interested.
It's small. It's portable. Well, let's see. It's so light that, oh man, this is too light. You can just sneeze and blow it off the table. That's how light it is. It's very light, very ingenious design too. As I feel it, I'm like, wow, this is great. And everything is self-contained, it seems like. So it's very nice. Okay. Thank you for bringing this thing in. Thank you. Folks, this is an impromptu thing. I just got a call that Michelle wanted to come in and demonstrate this. And thank you, Doctor, for showing this. And so, folks, I'm glad that they were able to show it, and I hope that you guys get a chance to check this device out. It seems very promising for some of you who have various degrees of macular degeneration. They may be sensitive to glare and light, so it is an alternative out there. Another innovation in technology that can help persons with various degrees of visual impairment. Okay, thank you. Now, I am going to Pete, are you ready? I'm sure that Pete is back and he's feeling much better. We're not going to give him any Coke now because we're going to keep him busy now. All of us deal with PDFs. PDF here, PDF there, PDF, PDF everywhere. And unfortunately, sometimes we get those pesky PDFs that are protected, or we get those PDFs that are images, which are just as exciting. However, just because they're images, that doesn't mean they're not accessible. And Pete's going to talk to us about what Adobe is doing, not just in terms of just Adobe Acrobat, but there's a lot of Adobe products out there. And Pete handles accessibility. I'm glad that we have somebody who is visually impaired, who understands our needs, heading up that section of Adobe, because they're now hearing from somebody in one of their own employees as to what our everyday needs are. I'm an engineer. I have an engineering background, and I didn't have to deal with PDFs when I was going through engineering school and when I was working. Some of the time I did, and I can remember how frustrating when I first heard PDF. Poor filthy file. I hated it. I used to have a worse word than dirty. But anyway, but I was able to survive. And as Adobe's come along, they have made additions to their reader, and Acrobat Professional has got a cool accessibility section that I use almost every day. So, without further ado, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Pete so he can tell you what it is that he does, why he wants to do that, because working with visual stuff is boring. I mean, not true.
It's not on.
It's interesting. But, okay, Pete, did you have
have a microphone here,
good.
But I have to lean right into it. Okay, well, we'll do this.
Would you like a cordless microphone?
No, this will work, assuming that you guys can hear me.
Okay. I will shut up and turn the microphone over to Pete and let Pete tell you what he does and why we should embrace Adobe.
Yeah, yeah. Tough act to follow. Thank you. There's a lot of really good... Thanks a lot, guys. I'm really, really, really happy to be here. Some of you I know from interacting with you guys in the Bay Area. Roger and I go back to telesensory, so it just gives you an idea. I have been with Adobe, it'll be, I can't even believe it myself, 9 years coming up in September. I started out on the Acrobat team. Adobe bought a company called Macromedia. They're the Flash people, which Flash is not being, where they're starting to move away from it now. But hey, what happened? My mic just went away. That went well. Yeah. Woke up the whole world. Oh, what did you do? Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, okay. Well, we'll try it this way. Hello? Can everybody hear me? Are you sure you're not just saying that? Okay. Okay, anyway. So I've been at Adobe for almost 9 years. When Adobe bought Macromedia, which is a company that did Flash and a lot of other things, they brought in two accessibility folks to handle all the other products besides Acrobat. I finally got a chance to join that team last year. So, I mean, I have some Acrobat knowledge, and now I'm getting into work on some of the other stuff. What I want to let everybody know, and some of you have heard this if you were at the convention in Louisville last year, you might have already heard this. The first thing I want to talk about is how Adobe looks at accessibility, period, the overall idea of it. How do we treat it? What do we consider? Basically, there are two key parts to the puzzle. The first thing that we think about is how users with disabilities access electronic information. So this group, we use screen readers, we use screen magnification. There are other folks with disabilities who may have to use on-screen keyboards, you know, or other devices. So we try to look at everything, all of the different areas. The other thing that is very, very important, and it's something that we have to direct a lot of effort to, is we need to look at how content designers, developers, and authors produce the content that can work with assistive devices that people like us have to use. And the way we look at it is accessibility is not a feature. It's a set of procedures and processes and techniques. So what we try to do is, one of the big parts of my job is that I'm reaching out to all of the product teams and I'm letting them know, look, you can't, let's put it this way, it's more difficult to build accessibility into your product after it's well off the ground. But if you start at the beginning, you can build it in as you go along, and then the process becomes a lot easier. And one of the things that Adobe has done, in fact, I did one of the courses on it, we've got a big training program for developers. We've got one track for developers. We've got one track for quality engineers. And we have another track for managers where we talk about the different standards. We talk about the different requirements. And we talk about the concepts that are there that people can use to make the products accessible. And before I talk about Acrobat 11 and the things that Acrobat 11 is doing for accessibility, a more important thing that I really believe in, and Adobe does as well, the issue is to make sure that the authors know what they're doing, to know that, yes, Acrobat 11 is the best tool for doing it, but other programs like Word and OpenOffice Editor, they have tools built in where if you start there as you're creating your documents, when you go to convert it to PDF, all of the information is going to be right there for you. So what if, and I'm telling you all this because a lot of times you will get documents that may not be accessible that you can't read. But if you have a way of reaching out to the people who are developing them, there's little things you can do. For example, if you're using Microsoft Word, a lot of times people think that they can make a heading in a book by just making the type font bigger, because that's all that a heading is. It's, you know, it's a larger font, it may be bold, it may be italic, so you can go in and you can manually say, make this text bold, make this text a few points higher in font size. But if you use the tools that Word gives you, Word has heading style, it's a heading style. If you have the text defined that way, then when it comes to converting to PDF, PDF knows how to mark that stuff. And if it's marked that way, then it becomes a lot more accessible. I have to figure out a way to do this, and I think hopefully maybe this microphone will pick it up. I was going to open up a document that's not tagged and try to read it with JAWS, and then take that same document that's properly tagged and show you how, you know, what a difference it makes, and it doesn't really take that much to do it. We'll see if we can get to that. As far as Acrobat 11 is concerned, one of the things that we tried to do is we wanted to make it easier for people to make the documents accessible. You load a PDF in, and in Acrobat 10, there was a report that you would run, and it would give you a page of saying, you don't have your graphics defined with alternate text, you didn't define headings, you didn't tag it properly. But it didn't really do very much for you. It just said, go do it, and come back and run the checker again. What they did in Acrobat 11 is they created what's called an action wizard, and that means there are several different common things that people do with documents. And one of the actions that they put in is something called make accessible. And what essentially happens is you open a document, you start the wizard. I thought that there would be a way that I could plug audio directly into these speakers, but if there's not, let me see if this can hear JAWS, because if it can, I'm going to try to open this wizard. I think some of it you'll be able to hear. Let me... No, that's not going to be loud enough, is it? No, that is not going to be loud enough. Okay. What I'll tell you, let me tell you some of the things that it does. What I'm going to do is I'm going to open up... I'm going to open up
presentation.ppt/Microsoft PowerPoint.
Well, now I hear JAWS through the microphone. Okay, hold on. Let me. Okay, bear with me one second, because if I can do this, it would be very cool. If I can't, I will do something. Okay, Adobe Acrobat started. Windows, I was afraid of that. Okay, here's Adobe Acrobat. Now I'm going to open a document.
Arrow, open dialogue, shift tab, not selected, sample, underline, statement, underline of underline, work under of.
Oh, okay. It's right there. No, it's not doing anything. Okay, they just plugged something into my computer in hopes that we could get JAWS to talk through the speakers, but I'm arrowing up and down, and we are not hearing anything, unfortunately. So what I will do is I am opening a document that is not tagged, And what I'll do is I will try to read through some of the things that this action wizard does for checking the documents to show you some of the things that it looks for. And if we stumble too much, I promise I won't put you all to sleep. We'll do something else. It should work now. Well, let's run it up the flagpole and see what happens. Well, that sounds a little bit more realistic.
Statement of work for local-Adobe Acrobat Pro.
Nice work, guys. Okay, now I'm really now I'm really on it. Wow, okay. Now I know where the microphone is, too, so hopefully I won't move back and forth and make it be all kinds of weird. Sorry, guys. Okay, the first thing I've got to do is I've got to bring up the accessibility area. So I'm going to bring up the view menu.
Alt V menu, leaving menus on.
Well, it works better if you leave it up there.
Alt V menu bar arrow menu rotate view sub menu.
Okay, I'm going to tools.
Accessibility A. Enter, leaving menus unknown.
Okay, so now if for those, because I know there are some of you who can. Oh no, but there's nothing projected. Never mind, forget that. Okay, so now I'm in an area where I can go to the accessibility wizard. I'm going to press F6, which that was one of the things that they did with Acrobat 11. They did in keystrokes a little bit to move around to different things.
F7.
No, F6.
F6, content editing closed.
Okay, so here's one of there is a menu of different things that you can do from this panel besides accessibility. I'm now going to arrow down.
Zero, pages, interactive object, action wizard, text threat, action wizard, closed.
Okay. I'm going to the action wizard. This is what I was telling you, that they've put in a number of actions which are tailored to guide people through different things that they want to do. So I'm going to now use the right arrow to open it.
Action wizard open. Tree view item create action .. Tree view item manage actions .. Tree view item find more on. Tree view item make accessible button.
Okay, this is the one that I want to use. So when I hit enter on this.
Enter list view not selected sample underline statement done.
What happened, the first thing that it wants to know is, okay, what do you want to make accessible? By default, what comes up in the box is the name of the file that you're working on. And what you can do is you can add other files if you wanted to do that. In this case, I don't, so I'm going to hit space bar because you may have heard JAWS say not selected. We have to select it, so.
Space.
Come on.
Sample underline statement underline of underline whoa ..
Okay, it doesn't have the whole name, but I know that it's the current file, and I only discussed that this morning that it doesn't give the whole file name. But at least this it does know that it does work the current file.
Tab, add files .. button.
See, and there's where you could go in, and that's a standard open file dialog where you can add more files if you want to.
Tab, start button.
Now there's a start button. That's what will start this whole process going. So I'm going to hit space on it.
Space, description, dialogue, title, colon, edit, alt, plus,
T, L. Now, here, this first screen allows you, you can either keep the title as is, or you can change it.
Tab, leave as a checkbox not checked, plus L, space, checked.
So, at this point, I'm going to take the lazy way out. I'm going to leave the title
tab,
as is.
Tab, subject, colon, edit, alt, plus S, tab, leave as a check.
And you can hear that it's giving me a place to type a subject, and it also gives me an option to say, leave it as is. I'm going to tab past a couple of more things.
Tab, leave as a checkbox checked. Tab, keywords, colon, edit, alt, plus.
These are keywords if you want to code.
Tab, leave as a tab, OK button.
Now, there's the OK button. So, that means I'm through this dialogue. I can hit space on it.
Space, recognize text, dash, general settings, dialog, primary.
What happens here is if you have a scanned image, it will go through this dialog as if it were going to do OCR on it. So it first wants to know what language.
Tab, PDF output style combo box, searchable image, 1 of 3.
And that's the one that is by default, which is the one that you want to use for.
Tab, downsampled, tab, OK button.
I usually just would, you know, leave these settings as they are. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through this. I'm going to hit space on the OK button.
Space, Adobe Acrobat Dialog. Is this document intended to be used as a fillable form? If so, choose text form fields. Yes, the text form fields button.
I'm not going to do that. This particular document does not do that. But if this were a form, the checker will go through and try to do its best to recognize where form fields are, which I know filling out of certain forms is definitely problematic at times.
Tab, no, skip this step button, Alt
plus N. At this point, I'm going to skip the step.
Space, set reading language dialogue, language colon combo box, English.
Now you can set any, all different languages, if it were like a foreign language, you could select that. This is a drop down that I can.
English with Arabic support, English with Hebrew support, English with English, Dutch, Danish, Dutch, English.
I this is not worth going through all of these. We're going to stay with English.
Tab, okay button.
Now we'll do okay.
Space, stop button checked. Page pass colon page 2 of 7. Adobe Acrobat dialog. Acrobat will detect all figures in this document and display any figures with missing alternate text. Do not show this message again. Checkbox not checked.
What that is saying is one of the very common problems. How many times do you go through a document and it says graphic this, graphic that, graphic everything? This gives the author a chance to write alternate text. And alt text, for those of you who may not know, it's something that you can code in when you're describing either a picture or whatever. The information is available to screen readers like JAWS, but folks who can see the screen never know it's there. And you have the option of either displaying this dialogue or not displaying
it. Tab, okay button.
I'm going to go ahead and let it display the dialogue because I can never remember when I go through it. So I'm not that smart enough. So we'll do okay here.
Space, set alternate text dialogue, edit.
Now what it has done, and JAWS is not real good about reading this whole dialogue, it's already gotten me on the first figure and it's giving me a place to type alternative text for the first figure that it has found. So I can type, wait a minute. Oh, caps lock's on, that's why.
T caps lock off. IT. This is alternate text tab, save and close button, Alt plus S, space.
And I can do it for any one of the graphs that it finds. I think there are several of them in here. I just wanted to show you it's possible to type the text. Now we're at the point where it wants to know, okay, do we want to create an accessibility report? And this is the report that is like what was created in earlier versions, but also we'll get panels here, and I'm going to show you the panels in a minute, where it will outline everything that passed and things that failed.
Tab, choose dot dot dot, but tab, attach report to document, checkbox not checked. Tab, all pages in document, radio button checked.
So actually you could either check the whole document or you could only check certain parts of it. If you know that part of the document is okay, you could tell it to do specific pages.
Tab, category colon combo box, document, one of tab, accessibility permission flag is set, checkbox checked.
Now these are the different things that it looks for as it goes through the document, and there are quite a few of these, but I want to let you hear some of the things that it looks for.
Tab, document is not image dash only PDF, checkbox checked. Tab, document is tagged PDF, checkbox checked. Tab, document structure provides a logical reading order, checkbox checked. Tab, text language is specified, checkbox checked. Tab, document title is showing in title bar, checkbox checked. Tab, bookmarks are present in large documents, checkbox checked.
The bookmarks are, if you, sometimes you can open a manual and it has, like, if any of you have looked at the Apple manual, that's the only one I can think of, where, like, if you've got an iPhone or whatever, they have a contents area. If you do F6 when you're opening the PDF document, this is the thing it's talking about.
Tab, document has appropriate color contrast, checkbox checked. Tab, select all button, Alt plus E. Tab, clear all button, Alt plus L.
Now, by default, everything is selected.
Tab,
so
show this dialog when the checker starts, checkbox checked.
And once you get familiar with doing this, once an author gets familiar with doing this, they don't have to show this dialogue all the time. They'll just let it take
tab,
the defaults
help button,
and go. There is help available on this as
tab,
well.
Start checking button, Alt
and then
plus S.
If I do start
space,
checking,
stop
it will go
check,
ahead
unknown.
And it will work on the document. There is a little thing going on here where sometimes I'm not getting notified that the checker is finished. I'm going to let it go for a couple of minutes.
Tab, read only. One, prepare, open. Tab. Tree view item. Add document. Description. Command. Status. Colon. Succeeded. Button. Tab. Tree view item. Set open options. Command. Status. Colon. Succeeded. Button.
And see what it does is it gives you an idea of everything that it did and whether it passed or failed.
Tab. Tree view item. Recognize text using OCR. Command. Status. Colon. Succeeded. Button.
And I'm going to do F6 here because there's another window that I'm trying to get to.
F6, tree view document, left parent, two issues, right parent, closed.
Because what happens is it gets to a point when it does find issues.
Document, left parent, 1, accessibility permission flag dash passed. Image dash only PDF dash passed. Tagged PDF dash passed. Logical reading order dash needs manual check.
So it knows, if it thinks that there is a problem, and what would happen, unfortunately, some of this is not usable by a screen reader. There, we have what's called a touch-up reading order tool that you have to go in visually and examine the document, and you can move things around. I have talked to the team about making this more accessible. It's not a very easy thing to do, but know that I have certainly brought it up to
them. Primary language dash passed. Title dash passed. Bookmarks dash passed. Color contrast dash needs manual check.
And this is another case. So it's you see zero. That it's
page content left parent one issue right page one tagged content dash passed tagged annotations dash passed.
Okay, unfortunately, I did not choose a very good example here because everything wound up passing the tests. The one thing I want to tell you is that if it finds something that has a problem, you can right click on it and it actually gives you an option to fix it, and it will let's say, in fact, I think there's
tab
something order here.
Dash pass.
I'm trying not to talk over Jaws. If you go down to
character encoding dash tag multimedia dash screen flicker scripts dash pass.
I'm looking for alternate text
time
because there is one thing I did not do.
Navigation links dash needs manual check. 0 forms alternate text left parent one issue right parent closed. Alternate text, 1, figures alternate text dash failed, closed.
Okay, so here is what it says. Now you heard it say, this is one time where it failed the test,
figures
which means
alternate text dash failed open, figures alt.
So what you can then do is you can open this.
2, figure 1.
And then if I go to figure 1, and then if you right click on it.
Shift F10, arrow, context menu, F, fix, F.
There's a thing that says fix, and what will happen here is if you select fix, it will take you into a dialog where you can enter the alternate text, and it will fix it for you. So the one thing that the Acrobat folks did was that they tried very hard to make the process of making PDFs more accessible, easier for people to do, more intuitive for people to follow.
Space, speech off.
And I'm going to turn JAWS off because that was the thing I wanted to show you about this dialogue and how you know how it worked. Okay, let me get back to my slides. Where my notes from slides? I realized that. That is the real big thing with Acrobat 11. They have tried very, very hard to make the overall process of making documents more accessible, easier for people to do. Just hang on one second. I got crossed up here. Bear with me. Okay, here, get the slideshow back so I have my notes. But I guess the really, really important thing, like I say, is to let people know that, you know, that the tools are available out there and that you can, there are very, very good ways to do this. I have to pause for a second because I'm trying to do too many things at once and this is not cooperating. My laptop decided to not cooperate.
I'm here. I really am. For some reason, I am not getting back to the notes that I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do is, I'm trying to get to my slideshow. Sorry about this.
That's okay. Technology at its best.
Technology at its definite best, especially when I'm trying to, well, what I was also trying to do was to have JAWS not, no, I did that on purpose. Because I want to, I don't need to. All right, now I'm there. Okay, so we talked about the Acrobat 11 stuff. The other things that I wanted to talk about and to mention to you is that not only is work being done on the reader side, on the PC side. They have started work on making Reader for mobile devices accessible. With Adobe Reader on the iOS side, it's version 10. They're still at the version 10 level. Somebody explained to me why they had the lower versions, but basically what they have come out with, if you go to the iTunes store, you can actually get the latest version of Adobe Reader for those of you that have iOS devices. It is unfortunately a first step and is not as useful as we would have liked it to have been, but the idea is that it is there. What you can do with it right now is that you can use the VoiceOver Reader. Those of you are, how many of you are VoiceOver users? Just tell me. Okay. Just because I'm afraid, you know, you Android people, I'm sorry, we're not doing that yet. Android is catching up with accessibility, I know. But the initial thrust for Reader for Mobile is that they're working with VoiceOver. You can navigate by character and word. You can only read a page at a time right now. In fact, I do have something. I wonder if this will work. I'm going to try something. I'm going to plug my iPhone in. It's Adobe Reader. It's called Adobe Reader. Now, I'm going to hit my unlock screen key. I don't know what this is going to do. If you all don't all jump at once here.
Slide to unlock.
Don't all do anything. Okay, it's not going to... No, I...
Slide. 3 o'clock.
I can do it. Well...
Thursday, April 11. Slide to unlock. Empty password field. 4 values required.
Okay.
I'm disconnecting that. You are not going to hear my passcode.
Okay. Excuse me for a second, Pete.
Go ahead,
folks, listen. We have individuals who are using... are hearing this and are... being treated to a good presentation, but they are using assistive listening devices. When you start asking questions or if you have a comment or something, please raise your hand. We have a sighted person that can look for you, inspire you, and get you a microphone. Please don't start asking your questions or making your comments until you have a microphone in your hand. It makes it easier for them and they're not left out. We don't want to be, you know, we want to be as inclusive as possible for everybody's needs, and let's just extend them that courtesy. I'm not being picky or anything. I just want you to think that it makes it easier for them to hear the entire question, and take advantage of what it is that had to be asked or will be learned from that. So, if you raise your hand and you have a question, wait until the microphone gets to you. Okay, I'll be quiet now.
I have a question, and I have a microphone. I am Mike Keithley, and I've always been wondering, where does the notion of tagging an Adobe file come from? Is that something that Adobe did, or is that something that's done with the...
It is something that Adobe has picked up on. Tagging has been around for a long time. Whenever you design a web page...
The basic way that it started being done was using something called HTML, hypertext markup language. And in this language, you had symbols for paragraphs, headings, tables, that kind of thing. And what Adobe did when they were creating PDF documents, we incorporated these tags into the documents. And where it comes into play particularly is in cases like when you're using assistive technology like screen readers and JAWS and whatnot, because those programs look for these tags. And so it's not an Adobe thing. It's something that Adobe, it's Adobe picked up on it and is using it.
This is Don Wilcox, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. I'm running the health library, and I occasionally come across a PDF that would be useful for our clients about health, but it's not big enough or bold enough. Is there any way to edit a PDF that's already, that I've downloaded?
Yes, there is, but you need to have Acrobat Professional to do it. That's Adobe Reader is not to do.
Hi, this is Andrea Pitzenbarger. I'm a member of the Orange County chapter and also on the tech committee. I have two quick questions. One, when Freedom Scientific came out with Convenient OCR, this big thing, it was touted, it was going to read PDFs, it were images, all this stuff. I've had very mixed results, and I wonder if you have any thoughts. I think it's a great idea, but sometimes it works great, sometimes it does nothing. The other thing is, I'm really dumb about this stuff. Adobe is something that lives on my computer, and I open it. I guess it opens when I need it to, so please forgive me if I'm asking a basic question here. How do you tell what version you have if you're up at 11? And if can a creator can use this wizard, but I'm assuming that a person like me who's opening a document can also use it to try to fix what they haven't fixed, in the beginning. I'm asking this because I have a family member who creates PDF documents for a company that I'm part of, and she doesn't have a clue about how to do this stuff.
All right.
She's older, but I'm wondering if I can do it on my end.
Do you have Adobe Acrobat?
Well, that's my question.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay, what will happen is when you open a PDF document, the top of the screen will either say Adobe Reader or it will say Adobe Acrobat Pro. If it says Adobe Reader, and that's the free program, then you will not be able to edit it. If it says Adobe Acrobat Pro, then you might be able to do it. And in order to tell what version you have, you would go to the Help menu, Alt
okay.
H, or click on Help, and you would go down to About Adobe Reader or Adobe Acrobat, and there it will tell you what version you have.
Okay, and Adobe, I take it that Adobe Acrobat Pro has to be purchased?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so Adobe Reader, will Adobe Reader eventually have any of this capability for those of us who, just use what came with our computers? Or
no, but what they are, I think they're working on some possibilities to make PDF documents more accessible, a deal where you can you can take a document, send it up to an Adobe server, and Adobe server, it's an idea. I'm not saying that they're going to do this, but one thing's been suggested, that you take a document, say that's a scanned image, and what you could do is you could have, it would copy the document out to a server somewhere. The server would process the document, perform the OCR on it, and give it back to you in as accessible a version of PDF as you could get. Now, again, please understand, this is not a definite that it's going to happen. As product manager, I was asked to come up with ideas for things that could be done. This is one of the things that I suggested. They're looking at it. I know there used to be a service way back when where you could email a document to an Adobe server. It would convert it to text and then send it back to you. It died a number of years ago for several reasons. One, the server was very archaic, and two, we started running into security issues, and it just got to be something that in the form that it was in, we couldn't be managed very well. But you know, the need is there. It's a known need. So like I said, we've got the idea in there, and you know, we'll see what happens. So you asked me another question too. The convenient OCR. Convenient OCR, I don't care what you get, any OCR program, whether it's convenient OCR, some other kind of a scanning program, it's dependent on the quality of what you're asking it to scan. That's the first thing. One of the other things I will tell you, and I have not used Freedom Scientific convenient OCR program all that much, but one of the things that they do tell you is there's an option that you should use. I think it's either control 0 or control 1. You have to zoom the content so that it fits the full screen. And I would go to the Freedom Scientific help pages and look at convenient OCR, because they do tell you somewhere that there's one particular option that you should set when you're opening a PDF to get the best results possible. I wish I could be more more positive, but believe me, I've had just as many experiences where I get a PDF, it doesn't work out. It's just as good as what it has to look at. So, okay, let me see now. Do we have any other questions? Well, all right. Okay. I don't know what the time constraints are here, guys. So, you know, what I was going to do is I was going to demo Adobe Reader. I had a couple of other quick things I wanted to talk about. But we could probably do a couple more questions if you want.
I do have a question. We're here till 4 o'clock, but I have a quick question regarding all that you've talked about and the emergence of the Mac becoming a very popular alternative to Windows. How is Adobe working on the Mac?
Unfortunately, it is not working as well as we would like it to. And that's another thing that there was a mindset a couple of years ago where it was felt that the Mac wasn't being used that much. However, as you all know, with the emergence of VoiceOver and what it's done on iOS devices, the realization is, in fact, there that you know, we need to do something for macOS as well. I have not been directly involved with the Acrobat team for a while, so I can't tell you specifically whether or not, or no, not whether or not, I don't want to say that. I can't tell you how much work they'll be doing with the next release of Acrobat and Reader. I just honestly don't know. I can find out. Now, Flash is something totally different. That's not necessarily true. The problem with Flash is that anytime you try to go to YouTube and open a video, you need Flash to run it. So it's best to update Flash whenever you're asked to, because there are some known security things that have been happening, and they come out with updates to fix these security things. The issue is that they have found that people do have ways of breaking into computers, you know, and so Adobe tries to fix them as soon as we find out about them.
Hello, Pete. This is Roger.
Hi.
First of all, I want to just echo what or add to what Andrea said, in that my experience is that most of the documents that I get are not from professional document people. They're from somebody's secretary or, you know, some office in city government or something like that. And it's really hard to tell. I mean, they think they did quite a job by just getting it to me.
Right.
And they don't understand anything about tagging and so forth. And I frankly, you know, I think there's not enough knowledge of tagging in general. I recently had a situation where I was working with the team that does our information technology in CCB.
Right.
And they said, if you want to help us prepare something for the web, take the Word document, put in the heading stuff. Put it, in other words, tag it. Let it, heading level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because
right.
Because those things, because JAWS knows about those too. You can
most of the screen readers too.
And so something that it's a general and it's a general situation where that this is some stuff that entirely apart from Adobe, we ought to become more aware of.
Well, it's, you know, and Adobe is trying, I mean, everywhere we can, and we are, when we're trying to sell the products, we're letting people know that the, you know, especially government agencies who, you know, buy
stuff.
Yeah, it's using,
Going into Word, they have a style menu.
Right, exactly. And if you have any
unless you make headings of different levels and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, and you can also there's formatting that you can use, and these are they're recognized standard tags, and good authoring software should be able to make those tags, especially if that software
when you put it on the web, the web creation tools can find those things too.
Yes, the web creation tools are going to use those as well.
Mike, I just wanted to add one other thing. I've been hearing a lot recently about a service called RoboBraille. Does anybody know about that? It's supposed to be another server that you can send things to and come back in different forms, even including Braille. But it's supposed to do some of the things that the old, you know, PDF to TXT thing at Adobe used to do and so on. Anybody know about that, I wonder?
No, I don't, certainly.
Roger, I do have information about RoboBraille at work, and I know it's. I still get messages occasionally that it's still active, and so I will I'll try to get that information for you and email it to you.
Okay.
All as I said was put it in our connection so the rest of us will know.
Thank you. I have a question about the Adobe with how it works with, I use Zoom Text, so there's a lot of compatibility problems still, even though Zoom Text is upgraded with the Adobe products, and I do work for the state of California, and I'll tell you, the web people just don't get it.
Okay, well, I'm not sure what, okay, I will tell you that one of the other aspects of my job is that I am talking to the different companies that make the programs, and in fact, AI Squared is one that I meet with regularly. They are aware of issues that people have been having, and they are they're really working to fix them. In fact, I am due to talk with them again pretty soon. You're saying all documents or?
At work I use 9.1, which your tax dollars will be buying a new one, but at home I use 10. So the 10 versions do some Adobe things a little better. But, I mean, it all depends on what operating system you are running also.
Yeah, you're talking a lot of variables here.
Yeah.
And what I can tell you is, as I said, part of my job is that I have regular calls to the different screen reader companies, and AI Squared is definitely one of them. In fact, they were very, very happy when I joined the team and started doing that, and they're looking for ways, and they're reporting issues to me that I pass on to the reader team. So there's definitely a lot of dialogue going, and I think the problem becomes, what is Zoom Text up to? They're up to 12, I think, now, aren't they? I'm not sure, but one of the problems with technology is that it changes so fast. Versions get outdated faster than you want them to. And it's not always easy to upgrade. And I we try to support one or two versions back, but we can't go, you know, too much further than that. It just becomes very, very difficult to do. And the problem is that the newer versions of the assistive technology are designed to handle the latest trends in what we're coming out with. And so it's just a necessary vicious cycle, I'm afraid.
So what about the cut and paste feature? Because like a lot of the web people are taking the forms and the overlaying, so you can do fillable forms online.
Right.
What is Adobe doing about the double dot X when people do the cut and paste shortcuts rather than
is this a problem with Zoom text?
The forms the proper way by HTML?
Is this a problem with Zoom text or what? I had not heard of this.
It's a problem with I think it's a conflict between Zoom text and Adobe, but
okay, I was not aware of this
problem.
This one I was not aware of.
So I tell the BizWiz people to go back and do the coding correctly.
Okay, I would have to hear more specific ways.
Information?
I do.
So I could get it from you
after?
Get
a card after. I'll give you my card.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay.
Can you tell me, you've been talking about Adobe Professional, or Acrobat?
It's Acrobat Professional, yeah.
Now, what are the caveats? You were saying a couple times you might be able to edit a document. What are the caveats there?
I don't understand your question.
Well, you said you might be able to edit an Adobe.
Not with Adobe Reader. No, you cannot.
No, I'm talking about Adobe Professional, where you said in Adobe Professional, I might have it wrong. It's Acrobat Professional.
Yeah, Acrobat Professional.
You might be able to edit content in an Adobe file, but there seems to be some caveats there because. You were said several times you might be able to.
No, protected documents is another whole issue. But there are, you know, if the original document is, there are a number of different what are called flags. There are a number of different protection things that certain people feel they need to have. If the original document was prepared in such a way where it's been locked so that people can't edit it, then no, you can't, you wouldn't be able to do it in Acrobat Professional. But, you know, I would say that, you know, unless it's been specifically blocked, Acrobat, you should be able to edit anything, any PDF document.
That sort of means then that if you had a form, if you were given a form, it's a PDF file, you could fill out this form and that's using that software.
Well, the thing of it is, the form has to be created properly, and if the only way that you can fill out the form is by using Acrobat, there's something wrong with the way the form was originally created. Because you know, most people who are going to fill out forms are not going to have Adobe Acrobat on their computers to do it. They're going to bring up Adobe Reader. The areas that you click into to type in will be editable, and that's the whole concept of filling out a form.
You should Adobe not need Reader, if the form says it can be done, Adobe Reader does have, you can edit fields with using Adobe Reader, then.
That is right.
Okay.
Okay. I would like to finish what I was talking about, because we started this whole thing about Reader for iOS, and I think, let's try this again. He probably disconnected me, though, didn't you?
Slide to unlock.
I'm disconnected, but that's okay.
Slide to unlock.
Guess not.
Copy reader. Recents. Button.
All right. So basically, it's, as I say, it's a little bit limited, but I can go. I've got a manual open. I bought a digital scanner a while back, and I've got a page open. If I just tap the right area on the screen.
Page 28 of 138. Turn the radio on. Rotate the top knob of the volume / squelch control clockwise to turn the radio on. Set both the volume and squelch knobs at their midpoint. 12 o'clock. Position.
Stop, please. Thank you. So I can now, I can read by word.
Page 28 of 138. Turn the radio on.
Or.
Characters. Space. Capital O. T. A. T. E. Space. T. A. E.
Okay.
Echo.
They don't have it yet where you can read continuously. You have to use the standard voiceover gestures to go from page to page. If you know what page you want to go to...
Landscape. Portrait.
Let's see. There is a... on the bottom of the screen...
Page 28 of 138. Turn the radio on. Rotate. Page 28 of 138. Adjustable.
So this... And I can already hear it's adjustable. I can swipe.
Page 27 of 138. Page 26 of 138.
You can also, underneath that...
Page 25 of 100...
Well...
25/138. Text field.
If you double tap in here, you can type a page number if you wanted to go to a specific page within the document. So it's a start. You can at least read one page at a time. The team is working on totally revisiting how a page is loaded and how the content is exposed to VoiceOver. And I don't know when they're going to have it improved. But at least, again, the fact is that they are working on it. I want to see, I'll make sure. No, and that's pretty much all I had about it. But I just more wanted to let you know that we are working on it, that it is there. Now I'm going to unplug my iPhone. And the next thing that I want to talk about is something called Adobe Digital Editions. I don't know if you've heard of what Digital Editions is or not. Basically, what happens here is that before the rapid explosion of wanting to read published content, books and whatnot on iOS, we worked on a program called Adobe Digital Editions. And what you can do with that program is that you can open books that, for example, can... Why did my computer just lock up again? Okay. Basically, you can read different books. Like if you have belong to a library that uses OverDrive, you can download books from there and read them with digital editions. I have also bought a book from Barnes & Noble, and there is a way that you can download the Barnes & Noble book and you can read it with digital editions. And what happened was they came out with a version in September of this year, Adobe Digital Editions 2.0. And what it does is it gives really good keyboard support. It has several different levels of resizing text for people that need that. It also supports all of the big screen readers, JAWS, Windowize, NVDA. It all works with it. You can do continuous reading. It runs on Windows systems, but unfortunately, continuous reading does not work on the Mac. But digital editions can be run on the Mac with VoiceOver. You can read a page at a time with it. So I'm going to give you some resources at the end of this slide. There is a page that you can go to download Adobe Digital Editions. And you can also get books that are like in the public domain. I think, was it Gutenberg, I guess, is one that has some of the classic books. And there are a number of other places. And I believe that the product page that talks about digital editions will list places where you can go to get them. Another thing that Digital Editions does very well is that it will reflow text so that if you do magnify the content, it will reflow it so that even the larger letters will go across the screen. And then the last thing that I wanted to touch on, and this is something that's near and dear to my heart, and I'm excited about the fact that things are starting to happen. We are actively working on making it possible to take other digital magazines and download them onto your iOS devices and read them. They currently, the stuff that's out there right now has pretty serious limitations where, you can't download them to your phone and read it. The only way that right now you can comply with legal requirements and whatnot is you have to produce stuff in an alternative format. Adobe InDesign, which is another Adobe product that a lot of the publishers use to create these documents, they came out with a version, I think about a year and a half ago, that does allow authors to create output in other formats like tagged PDF and HTML. And one of the things that we're working, that the DPS team is working on now, is to create a tool so that the publishers, since they already can produce the output, we want to make the output even more accessible, working well with VoiceOver. I actually took a trip up to our office in Seattle where the team is and gave them a full demonstration of how VoiceOver works. I showed them another app that does read books so that they can see how I, as a blind person, can go through looking at like chapter headings and paragraphs and all of the things that you can do with VoiceOver. They were very enlightened by what I had done. They have it as a high priority item on their list of things to do. They have not given me a time frame on when it's going to come out, but they have got me included in a beta list that as they come out with versions that are going to be accessible, they want my input and they want it right away so that they can so that they can make the product better. So the way I want to conclude with this presentation is to say that, as I said at the beginning, I've been with Adobe for 9 years, and even before I got there, it was really cool. I found out about the little plugin. Those of you can remember way back to Reader 5 or 6.1 or whatever it is, you had to install a special program to make the PDFs accessible. It was a thrill for me, and this is like back in 2002 and 3 while I was trying to find another job. It was nice to be able to download either reference manuals or system manuals or things that were in PDF and be able to read them. So before I even started at Adobe, I was very impressed with the commitment that Adobe is making. There are 6 of us on the corporate accessibility team. 2 of us are blind. I have another fellow in London who takes care of the European accessibility needs. I've got a couple of experts who are very familiar with making content accessible. We are really working very hard with all the product teams, and I think the commitment is there. It's just that everything takes time, and I continue to try to drive the message home to people that it is becoming more and more important, because there are more people, not only who are like us who may have been blind since birth, but there are people, as they get older, they're going to start losing their eyesight. They're tied to these devices, and they're going to still want to use them, and they're not going to take no for an answer, that they can't use it. And then the other part is, we know that ADA is undergoing reform. They've just come out with a new version of web guidelines that require accessibility. There's more rigid standards that have to come about. So, the recognition of the need is out there, and it is very, very committed to wanting to make it happen. And I feel like, because of the fact that I can show people when they ask, how difficult is it? Why am I having so much trouble? Why should we make this more accessible? And if I show them with something accessible, how cool it is for me to be able to do the same things that they do. The message is getting across. So I'm pretty much done with my quote-unquote prepared remarks. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed coming up here. I guess unless Lewis has got some other things going, if there's any more questions or whatever, fine. Otherwise, I'm going to shut up now.
No, you're not. I have questions.
Okay, I'm leaving. Sorry.
No. Hey, once you get him here, you got to ask all the questions. I use the built-in reader in Acrobat Professional. And sometimes when I have an image file that I cannot open with curse file, because for those of you that don't know, if you have a PDF document, you can also open it with curse file and read it. And if it is not protected, you can save it as a different format. And I've done that. Saved it as a RTF or text file and dumped it off to my BookSense or the other screen reader to make it easier to, not screen reader, note taker, just so that I can work with it as needed. But the question is this. Sometimes I notice that when I have a large document and I'm using the built-in reader in Adobe, it will start reading, and then all of a sudden, after about two or three pages, it'll stop, and I have to start it up again. And I'm wondering, is that a known problem, or is this something that I could be doing wrong?
A couple of questions. First of all, do you have a screen reader running like JAWS or anything when you're trying to open the document?
Nope.
Okay. This is not, I mean, there. The reason I asked about the screen reader is because, as most of you know, when you have large documents, you can tell when assistive when JAWS or any of those programs is running, if you have more than a certain number of pages, you either, no wonder this hasn't been working, I've been leaning over the microphone, duh, wake up now. you can tell Adobe how big a document is before it changes the way it reads a document. What I'm getting at, Louis, is that I'm wondering if maybe your whole document is being loaded into memory, and I don't know how much resources you have in your system. Maybe that's a problem. I don't know.
Okay. So
it's without getting into real specific questions, I'm not sure how I can answer you. It's not. I mean, we've had problems in the past where you open up a large document and it stops reading, but. That usually has to do with whether you're handling it a page at a time or whether you're handling the whole document. Go ahead. Get a microphone first.
Yeah, let's wait for a microphone to you. Cool, go for it.
I am. Oh.
There she is.
The program that you were talking about called Additional Editions.
Oh, Digital Editions,
Digital
yes.
Editions. Can you use it for the iPhone?
It is not available for the iPhone, no. No, it only runs on Windows and the Mac. Oh, and that's right, I forgot to do something. But I wanted to give you a couple of links for information where you can get further information. You probably know most of them. But I'd like to do this before we get in too deep into anything else. And what I will do is I will go very slowly for the benefit of you who are using note takers. Probably the most important site to worry about is the Accessibility Resource Center, which is www.adobe.com/accessibility. And we follow the convention that a lot of other companies do, you know, the same, you know, the company.com/accessibility. But that is this real central jumping off place for information about accessibility of a lot of our different products. www.adobe.com/accessibility. And then another resource that you can get to from the accessibility page, but which will also give you information about late breaking news, is our accessibility blog. I'm sure you know, most of you know what blogs are and what they're used for. The one that we have is blogs, B-L-O-G-S, .adobe.com/accessibility. Now, if you come away with just these two, that will probably get you to anywhere you need to go. The only final thing would be if you have accessibility-related questions that you'd like to email to us, we have an email called 2.5 guesses, accessibility@adobe.com. And that email is monitored all the time. Somebody will get back to you with that. Go ahead. Those are the big ones. So.
I've been in trying to do research on finding, there are seem to be many, many sites out there that will convert Word documents into PDF files and PDF files into Word files. And the question I always keep coming up with, how can you rely on them to really, to faithfully reproduce the output file?
That's you really question. Can't, because they're not Adobe. For one thing, they're not in any way affiliated with Adobe, so there's no guarantee of what you're going to get.
Yes, I understand that.
And
but perhaps there's a tool somewhere that you might use to say, oh, this is an Adobe file, and the font that is used most often is this, and the point size is that, and so on and so forth.
Now, the only way that you could really do something like that is you would have to take the PDF that's created by these other tools and run it through our accessibility checker with Acrobat Professional, because otherwise there really would be no way. What the team did, you know, in terms of overhauling the accessibility checker in 11 is that they looked at all of the possible standards and all of the ways that things should be tagged. And if they don't find these things present in the document, then, you know, it passes the test. And we don't necessarily look at fonts. What we look for is the fact that the characters are created in such a way that screen readers can pick them up, and that also there is marking inside the document that says, okay, this is a paragraph, this is a table, this is a heading. And, you know, there's really no other easy way. We don't have a specific tool other than what's in Adobe Acrobat Professional.
Thank you.
Any other? There is another question. Go ahead.
I belong to an organization that sends me a newsletter every month, and it's Adobe, but my computer says blank document. There are no tags. So if I owned Adobe Professional, would I be able to change it? Or what they've started doing now is sending me a copy in Word without any of the diagrams.
You talking about a blank document reminds me that I want to ask everybody a question, especially because I was in contact with someone else about this. I realize that most people are on Windows 7. What do you have, Windows 7, or do you have...
XP.
Okay, there's the problem.
Oh.
Let me... this is going to be worth explaining this, because there are probably others of you that have XP. Okay. I thank you very much for bringing that up. Did somebody plant you? I didn't plant you, but I should have. I mentioned before about the fact that we've been running into a lot of security things lately. And it's been going on for a while. And what we had to resort to doing is we had to take all PDF documents and present them on the computer in such a way that it's protected from outsiders getting into them. On Windows 7, there were ways to get around it so that screen readers could still see the content of the documents. Unfortunately, under Windows XP, that does not happen. There's a very, very easy way to fix this. And I will go slowly. And Louis, what I'll do is I'll email you something that with instructions as well. But I'll try to go slowly now for those of you who need to do it. If you start Adobe Reader, and it doesn't matter whether you have a document open or not, you want to press Control K. That brings up all of your preferences. There's a whole hundreds of preferences that you can set within Adobe Reader. When you get into the preferences area, you're on a list of different what are called categories. What you want to do is arrow down until it says security, and I believe it's security enhanced. Wait a minute. Do I have Adobe Reader on here? Hold on a minute. I don't. Bear with me one second, because if I have it on here, then I can write and tell you for sure. But, of course, I don't. So I'm going to go from memory. It's either security or if you what you want to look for first is something that says security enhanced. And if you have the two of them, the first thing you'll come on if you use the down arrow will be security. And then after that would be a security enhanced. If you have security enhanced, what you want to do is once you're on that item, press the shift tab key a couple of times until you hear the words enable protected mode at startup. This is a checkbox. And by default, it is checked. Uncheck it. Hit OK, tab back to OK to close preferences. It will send you a message. You will get a screen that says you must, it wants you to make sure you know what you're doing. And in this case, you do. And it also will tell you that Adobe Reader needs to be restarted in order for the changes to take effect. So once you hit OK and shut down Adobe Reader with Alt+F4 and then start it again, all of your documents should be able to open just fine. It takes that protection out. It was the only way that we could get around the process. We worked a number of different things. We worked with Microsoft and everything else to do it, but for some reason, they couldn't come up with a fix with it. It's called Enable Protected Mode at Startup. And it's either under security. I know in Acrobat they have security and security enhanced. I'm not sure if both of them are there under Reader because I normally don't use it. I have Acrobat on my system. But if you don't see a security enhanced, it will be under security. But that will fix you up.
I didn't have a piece of paper to write all that down. I'll never remember it.
Okay.
Is there a way that I can get you to email it to me?
Yeah, we're going to, Louis and I have already talked about this. I am going to send him the information. He will post it wherever he thinks it's appropriate for everybody to get it. I definitely want you all to have it. And he's also promised me he's going to bug me every day until I send it.
That's right. No, because here's something that all of us can use. I have a lot of people that I work with who are diehard XP users who can benefit. So we will make sure that you get it one way or the other. And the best thing to do is to write a quick descriptive of how the step-by-step procedure and post it on the connection or post it on the BC so that it can go out to everybody and you will all have it. Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, Pete, this is very informative, very enlightening. I really like this, so I want to thank you for coming out to talk to us. All right.
This was fun. I also got to fly on a little prop jet airplane, which I haven't had a chance to do for a while, so that was fun. I love to fly. If I could see, I would have been a pilot, but that's another story. Thank you guys very much. I really love being here.
Thank you. Well, folks, listen, it's 3:47 right now, 3:48. So we have about 12 minutes or so before we have our CCLV session. And so for now, if you guys don't have any other questions or any other comments, what I'm going to do then is I am going to stop talking and let you guys take a breather. And those of you that are going to be here for the next session, stand up and stretch your legs and do what you need to do. And for those of you that are leaving, thank you for coming. And we look forward to having another tech session for you in the fall convention. So, Pete, once again, thank you very much. And Mark, thank you for opening up. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.